Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, let me tell you something. I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. It kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hi, folks, and welcome into this bonus edition of Next on the Tee, where your golf legends live and your game gets better. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and it's hard to imagine that this is episode number 40 of the year. It's even harder to imagine that this is season 12 and that I've been blessed to do this show for so long. I remember 12 years ago, I kind of saw this show and podcast just as an avenue of getting into radio. Now, hardly anyone listens to terrestrial radio anymore, and everybody has gotten into doing podcasts. Now, I listen to SiriusXM a lot of times when I'm in the car, which back when it launched, people thought it was crazy that anybody would pay to listen to radio. We got it free over the air. Why would I pay for it? But the upshot was none of those annoying car dealer ads. Boy, that just definitely makes whatever you pay for SiriusXM worth it. But here in the podcast world, and with everyone having one now, it means that much more to me that you're here, that you press play on Next on the Tee, and that you've made this show a part of your weekly entertainment content. I thank you all so very much for all of that. This time around with the show, I've got two great friends that I'm looking forward to sharing with you, starting with a guy who is now in six Hall of Fames. So greatness emanates from every fiber of his being. And who is that? Well, it's Jim McClain. It was just recently announced that he is joining Dennis Walters as a member of the 2025 PGA of America Hall of Fame. And along with those six Hall of Fame inductions, Jim was going way back a part of the Houston Cougars National Championship team in 1970. He is one of the very few players to ever qualify to play in the U.S. Junior Am, the U.S. Am, the U.S. Open, and the U.S. Senior Open. And his students have won at every level. So as an instructor, he has taken his game and his persona and just elevated it to unworldly levels. Look, I mean, his golf academies are all over the world. His coaching tree, if you looked at one in real life, it would be a giant redwood. And beyond all of that, Jim is just an outstanding human being. What a wonderful person Jim McClain is. And in this episode, Jim and I talk about the six-pack of Hall of Fame plaques that he has now. We look back at this year's U.S. Open, where one of his students, James Nicklaus, had a great showing. James opened that tournament with a round of 69, one of only a few players to shoot under par. We touch on the junior championship that he sponsors in the South Florida PGA section. Jim was also one of the early adopters of technology and of TrackMan. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, we get into one of the great courses that he started out early in his career working at up in New York, Sleepy Hollow. And being a guy that's in the Metropolitan Golf Hall of Fame, I get his expert insights into Bethpage Black as we look ahead to the Ryder Cup. So Jim is just, like I say, one of the outstanding, not only individuals, but also one of the great coaches in our game. Nobody knows this game better than Jim McClain does. And he's got a keen insight, like I say, into the Ryder Cup. Following him is a college golf coach who has become a wonderful friend. And the program that he is building, I am a huge fan of. And that is Steve Shingledecker, the men's golf coach over at Robert Morris University. Steve took over a program that was asking to get into tournaments. Please let them play. When they did get in, the team was consistently near the bottom of the leaderboard. A few years later, now his players have worked so hard, they have developed their game so well that they're either at or near the top of leaderboards. And the team has a reason to feel confident nowadays that they can walk into any tournament and have an opportunity to walk out with the trophy. It's exciting to see how far the program has come. It's even more exciting to see RMU next to the name of players that are near the top of leaderboards. I am blessed to call Steve a friend, and it is great when I receive a text from him like I did not that long ago, proclaiming how excited he was looking at the way his team was playing at one of just their internal qualifying tournaments. Guys, well under par or right at or around par. That is a testament to his skill as a coach and how hard they have all worked to get there. So we get into all of the things coming up this year at RMU. The fall golf season is underway. Steve and I go through their tournament schedule and why the golf team is set to build on the excitement that the RMU basketball team started back in March when they made their run into the NCAA tournament. So we're going to have a lot of fun, folks, here over the next hour or so. Two fantastic guests, lots of great stories, a lot of exciting things coming your way on this edition of the show. And folks, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for taking the journey with me. And thank you so much for your support of the show. You guys are absolutely outstanding. Sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. Okay, but before we get things rolling, I want to give a shout out to my friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find next on the T on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I want to welcome a new member to the Next on the Tee family, Sunday Swagger. Tired of boring golf clothes? Sunday Swagger is changing the game with premium performance apparel that delivers the look and feel of $100 polos for much, much less. Never sacrificing on style or comfort, their bold polos, shorts, and outerwear feature four-way stretch and moisture-wicking fabric that moves with you, whether you're crushing drives or crushing happy hour. With over 300 unique designs and vibrant colors, ranging from bestsellers like Jawbreaker to exclusive collaborations with Guinness, Sunday Swagger offers something for everybody. And their matching prints for couples and families with children are flying off the shelves as their most popular styles. You might even recognize Sunday Swagger designs in popular Hollywood movies and TV shows, including Happy Gilmore 2. Sunday Swagger is guaranteed to turn heads and spark conversation. Visit SundaySwagger.com and join the Sunday Club for exclusive drops and member benefits. Sunday Swagger, it's your swagger. Embrace it. Own it. And folks, this year, get ready to experience the game like you've never experienced it before at the Keep. It's the brand new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course up at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, the Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are even more spectacular in person than they are in the pictures and the videos. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round there is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, the Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore this year. The Keep is open for preview play and it's waiting for you. But you gotta hurry now because spots and availability are filling up fast. So don't wait. Check out both courses, the Highlands and the Keep, for yourself online at themacklemore.com. And then do yourself and your buddies, or yourself and your family a solid by getting your spot reserved now. And experience distance and forgiveness all at once with the new QI35 driver from TaylorMade. QI35 is designed to give golfers more distance from more of the face while maintaining maximized forgiveness through high MOI designs. Whether you're looking for low spin and maximum workability or easy launch and plenty of adjustability, it's available in low spin, core, and max models. QI35 also has a full assortment of fairway woods and rescues to deliver distance and forgiveness throughout the top end of your bag. Check them all out online at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now back in Next on the Tee with me is one of the top instructors in the history of our game, and that is Jim McLean. Let me remind you a little bit about Jim's background. He's from the state of Washington and won the Washington Junior Championship twice. He also won the Pacific Northwest Amateur three times, the Seattle Amateur, and the Four States Amateur in Texarkana, Texas. He played his college golf at the University of Houston from 1969 to 1973. Where he teamed with legends like Bruce Litsky, Bobby Watkins, Bill Rogers, Tom Jenkins, and our good friend John Mahaffey, and he helped the Cougars win the 1970 National Championship. He also helped them finish second in 71, 72, and 73. He finished fourth at the 1971 U.S. Amateur Championship. He was named All-American in 1972, graduated with his degree in economics. Jim is one of the few players to qualify for the U.S. Junior Am, the U.S. Amateur, which he did so four times, the U.S. Open, which he did so twice, and the U.S. Senior Open. He played in the 1972 Masters as an amateur, and he made the cut there. He won the Northwest Open and is a three-time winner of the Pacific Northwest Amateur. Jim won the Pacific Coast Amateur Championship at the Olympic Club in San Francisco. As an instructor now, he's won just about every award there is to win. He's been inducted to now in six different Hall of Fames, including the World Teachers Hall of Fame, and is a member of the 2025 PGA of America Hall of Fame, coming up those inductions here soon. I consider him to be on the Mount Rushmore of golf instruction, and it is a huge privilege for me to say that he is back for a fifth time with me here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Jim, thanks for coming back on the show.
Well, Chris, thank you very much. I really appreciate, you know, that big introduction. It's nice to be with you.
So I want to start right there with a huge congratulations to you on being inducted into the PGA of America's Hall of Fame. What a wonderful honor for you. Talk about getting that news.
Well, yeah, that was a surprising phone call. And I got a call the next day from a great friend of mine, Dennis Walters, who a lot of golfers know from his great shows that he's done all over the world. And we played a ton of golf together in college. And Dennis had that unfortunate, terrible accident that took away his legs. And he performs out of the golf cart. And he's been in going in with me. And some other great people from the PGA, and also Nancy Lopez from the LPGA. So yeah, it's going to be a fun night.
Jim, you're in the South Florida PGA Hall of Fame, the Metropolitan PGA Hall of Fame, the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame, Miami Sports Hall of Fame, the Pacific Northwest Hall of Fame, and now the PGA of America. And my question is, and I've said this to you before, I don't understand how it's possible for a guy who's got that level of a resume is not also inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. What do we got to do to get you in there?
Well, I haven't even thought about that, but this is a tremendous honor. All of those are great honors for me. And in the Northwest, of course, I was just out there for a couple of months, and I got my great friends in the Northwest and then the Met section and down here in South Florida. So that's plenty, you know, more than I deserve for sure.
Jim, I want to look back to the U.S. Open. One of your students is a promising young man, James Nicklaus. He opened the tournament with a fantastic round of 69. He went on to make the cut. He's a guy who really didn't start playing seriously until his sophomore season at Yale. He's also a really good hockey player. Talk about getting James to the level that he is, and a guy who makes the cut at the U.S. Open in such a short period of time.
And he also played football for Yale for 1 year, which is kind of interesting. He's a tremendous athlete, super smart guy. He was in pre-med at Yale. He right now is 77th on the Corn Ferry list. He just made the cut today in Nashville. So the top 75 are exempt for next year. And then, of course, if he can move his way up, he can get on the PGA Tour, which is his, you know, major goal for him when we started about 3 years ago. Yes, it's been exciting. I was up in Oakmont with him and went three practice rounds with him. And then he opened up with this unbelievable round, one of the few rounds shot in the 60s on day one. Oakmont's definitely one of the hardest courses that I've ever seen. And yeah, that was a big boost for him. I think that was a confidence builder to get up there. He went through stage one and stage two of the qualifying, and then got there. I think he was the only one that went through both stages and then made the U.S. Open. It's very difficult to get into the U.S. Open as a qualifier. Not very many spots, and you've got to shoot super low in that qualifier to get in the U.S. Open. And then when he got there, you know, we had some great practice rounds as far as playing with some really great players. And it's all part of the confidence, part of the building blocks.
Jim, you're also so wonderful as a junior teacher. And as a matter of fact, just recently, You were a sponsor of a junior tournament down in the South Florida section, the Labor Day Classic, won by Matthew Marigliano. But talk about being a sponsor of that tournament and the great things that you're doing there.
Well, I've done some sponsorships with the South Florida PGA for their juniors, and I'm very happy to do this. And I was very happy to sponsor this event. Unfortunately, I couldn't be back in time to be there. We had some of our teachers go up for it, and I think it went really great. It was nice. It was a 3-round tournament, sold out field. And the South Florida PGA does, you know, just an unbelievable job with everything. Jeff Lofstedt and his whole crew there, they do great with everything, but they do unbelievable work with the juniors. So I'm just happy to be a little super small part of it.
Jim, you pioneered using video to do swing analysis. In fact, you were an early adopter of TrackMan. Talk about being willing to embrace technology instead of just sticking with the way things had always been done.
Well, yes, I started with video very soon as I could get one, as soon as they came out to the public. And I was trained up with a guy named Carl Welty out in California, a great friend of mine who was just unbelievably smart. And I've loved studying video, studying the PGA Tour. We've had the opportunity since I've, you know, he was at La Costa, so we could film out there with the tour players. He could film the San Diego Open. And then I was at Westchester Country Club to start, ended up at other places like Doral and Mayakoba and other places where we were on site for major PGA Tour events. And I've had big staffs. So we've been able to film a lot of players and really study what they do by learning from Carl to be very precise where we put the camera and try to get everybody exactly the same way so we could do good research. But then, yes, TrackMan came out, and I was right on top of that. I was doing the club fitting at Doral. So at first we were using TrackMan, believe it or not, for club fitting, but then it quickly transformed into teaching. And I'm with Foresight now, and they do, with the quads, we do, you know, great work with our students with showing them, you know, about 30 different parameters. If you want to, of course, that's way too complicated, but you know, you get great information now also with force plates. So for me, I need to be on the edge, the leading edge of teaching with our golf schools in different locations. And plus I'm just interested in it. I want to know more about it. And it's just been such a huge part of my life.
Jim, when I was checking out your Instagram page at McLean Golf, there's a sheet that got posted by one of your assistants that they found from 1989 about how to get the most out of taking lessons. It looked like, as I was reading through that old page, a lot of that still holds true today.
Yeah, they found that in going through some of this old storage I've got. I've got way too much stuff saved, but yeah, that was a couple. That was posting one side of the sheet, but you know, how to take a lesson, how to get the most out of your lessons. That I would post and send to all of our members at Sleepy Hollow Country Club, and of course, then as we've done golf schools, I've tried to kind of do the same thing. But I think a lot of people, when they come to a lesson, might not be completely prepared. They may not be comfortable with asking certain questions, and then also on how to follow up with your lessons and how to get the most from your lessons.
As you mentioned, that sheet was from Sleepy Hollow Golf Club, and several of the greatest architects of all time at one time or another have had their hands on Sleepy Hollow. C.B. McDonald, Seth Rayner, A.W. Tillinghast, Gil Hance more recently. It's also a club that's produced Cam Young. Talk about the course and your time there.
Yeah, it was a great C.B. McDonald layout, but then Tillinghast did the back 5 holes, which were just outstanding holes. And then Sleepy Hollow is just one of the most special places, you know, private clubs in America. It's just inexplicable how great that place is. I was so blessed to be there for 6 years. And then Gil Hans came in and did this incredible, you know, renovation where he took out a lot of the trees, which you know, you kind of hate to take the trees out, but then you could see the Hudson River, and it also opened up some of the vistas in between the holes. And, you know, I'm glad to see Sleepy Hollow's ranked in the top 100 courses in America, which absolutely should be. And, amazing that there are that many, like you mentioned, the great architects that have been at that golf course. And then, yes, Cameron Young growing up there. My boys grew up there, are good players, but Cameron Young now, you know, just a spectacular player on the United States Ryder Cup team. Absolutely the highest honor you could have in American golf. So I know his dad, David, who was the head pro there for 20 years after me. And he did a great job. It's going to be just unbelievable. I played Bethpage many, many times. We've played state opens there that I played in. And it's a great, great layout. And I would also say that I worked for 5 years with Keegan Bradley, and I've worked for a year with Russell Henley. So there's two important people on this team. So it's going to be a fantastic, unbelievable rivalry now with two great teams, because the European team is just stacked. And I know Keegan's going to have his hands full pulling off a win.
Were you surprised Keegan didn't pick himself, or did you think that was the right thing to do?
I was really surprised. I really wanted him to play. You know, as I've looked at this, I know maybe it's beyond possibilities to do both jobs, but he has great co-captains. I mean, really great co-captains. I think he's one of the best players in American golf, one of the best players in the world. He's been ranked in the top 10 in the world. And I think they really could have used him playing, but I have respect. You know, I know that he was picked to be the captain, and I know he takes it very, very seriously. And I know he thinks this is the best thing for the USA team, but for me, I wish he was hitting that first tee shot. I think, you know, New York would have just been explosive. Oh, well, it will be anyway, but he's such a, you know, going to St. John's right there in New York City and being a Northeast guy, you know, it's going to be huge anyway, but I would have loved to see him play.
What do you expect from the course itself, Jim? From the multitude of times that you've been a part of either playing at Bethpage Black or being a part of tournament setups there, can it be configured in such a way to give the U.S. team a leg up?
Well, I definitely think they're going to do the best they can. Most of the Europeans play a lot in America, and they've played Bethpage as well. It's just a great, great golf course. It's one of Tillinghast's best. It could be his best. I mean, Quaker Ridge. I was also the pro at Quaker Ridge for 6 years, and Wingfoot right across the street. So those three courses in New York done by Tillinghast that are, you know, hard to beat, you know, hard to beat anywhere in the world. And Bethpage is just a monster. It's just a great, great layout. I think it does give one advantage, or not advantage, but one thing is the greens aren't that tough to putt as some of the other courses. They're a little flatter, but getting there is a little bit of the problem. I do know they've moved that tee up on number one, and, you know, wouldn't mind seeing DeChambeau hit the first tee shot of the day there on the green, which maybe there's a few other guys that can pop it on the first green, which was unthinkable when I was playing there years ago in New York.
How about on the fan side? What's your expectation to see? Because I can't imagine anything better than holding a Ryder Cup in New York City with the raucous New York fans cheering on the U.S. team, and on the opposite side, giving a really hard time to anybody on the European side, particularly if and when they make a mistake.
I heard one of the PGA guys say it's going to be comparable to a Super Bowl or a World Series or a Final Four. And I think that's really, it is going to be like this is going to encompass a lot more than golf fans when they're playing in New York. It's going to be just unreal with the energy there. I can't imagine a better place to play the Ryder Cup than Bethpage.
Are you going to go up?
I'm not going up. I'm going to watch it on television. I've been to them. If I could be walking, I mean, I don't want to say this the wrong way, but inside the ropes, I would probably go. But yeah, there's so many people out there. It's very difficult to watch. And watching it on TV is, you know, I guess I'm just getting old and lazy, but it's just so great to watch it on TV and be able to watch all the matches and be able to see better what's going on. But of course, being there is going to be a real experience.
Getting back to your Instagram page, I saw that there's also a post on there from a 1989 Golf Illustrated where you wrote an article about swinging to the left. And there's been a lot of chatter about that notion out on social media. Talk about what you mean by swinging to the left when a lot of other instructors are talking about swinging inside out.
Yeah, well, that was a controversial article. It was written with with Golf Illustrated. I wrote with them before I went to Golf Magazine and then to Golf Digest. But I had just been watching from a lot of video how far best ball strikers move the club around the corner of the swing, around to the left. And most of the teaching was swinging more down the line or swing even worse. I mean, swinging inside out, like you mentioned, which is good for higher handicap players. But for better players, the club swings, you know, what I could see, it was swung way more to the left than most people had noticed. And so I wrote that article and I continued to speak about it for decades. And I think it's very common knowledge now. I think everyone, every top teacher or every teacher in golf probably understands that the club swings on an arc and that the club swings left right after impact. And it doesn't swing. You know, we always were kind of taught to chase the target line or go down the target line and where your arms kind of run off a little bit from your body. And, you know, there's kind of the two styles of teaching, the kind of the old swinger action, swinging the club with in the body follows the arms. And now it's a much more of a power game using the big muscles and keeping the arms more connected to the rotation of the shoulders as you go through the shot. And using vertical force, of course.
Jim, let's take that a step further, because looking back at the expanse of your career when you played in college and then all the great things that you have done as a coach and the players that you have spent time with and the evolution of golf swings and the evolution of instruction, how much has it changed over the years?
Well, it's pretty much a totally different game, especially the equipment is so much. It's way better and way different and way lighter, and the ball's better, and the conditioning is better, and the kids get better instruction right from the get-go. The courses are manicured a lot better. The ball runs out further. The clubs allow you to swing the club faster, and also there's much better use of ground force reaction, and you know, using vertical force where you're pushing into the ground and pushing up. Not that everyone didn't do that. I mean, Sam Snead was famous for the Sam Snead squat where he really pushed into the ground and out. And I think we all knew that, but we didn't use those words. When I wrote The X Factor, I put a chapter in there about how the hips rise coming into impact. I hadn't really seen anybody talk about that. And I talked about the stretching, the X Factor of increasing the lower body, and as you started down while the shoulders were still going back. So we were pretty much new, good information, but now there wasn't biomechanics then, and now there is really good biomechanics, and there's really good force plates, and there's just much better information. But it's not that we, you know, pretty much knew a lot of this, but not nearly the way it's expressed much better nowadays.
And to that point, Jim, and looking at your golf academies, it just feels like today's junior players are so much more ready and able and prepared to go out and play tournament golf and to rise up through the system from junior golf and playing college golf and then getting out onto whether it's the Epson Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour and then rising up to the PGA or the LPGA Tours. How much better are today's players prepared versus back when you were coming up through the system?
Yeah, yes, I do. You know, a boy in high school won the U.S. Amateur and he played against a 19-year-old in the finals. So, that's where the U.S. Amateur was. It was really like a U.S. Junior Championship, except it was the U.S. Amateur. That's how good they are. And yeah, you watch the kids play. We've got some great juniors here at the Biltmore Hotel that we're working with. We've got a big high school tournament with the best kids in the state of Florida playing here at the Biltmore this Monday. I'm going to be interested to watch that. Yeah, it's just great. Yeah, they're better. Yeah, it's better. They swing better. They hit the ball further. It's just so impressive to watch them.
Jim, just a couple more before I let you go. And you've got golf academies around the country and in different parts of the world internationally. Remind everybody about your facilities and what you have available for them there.
I've got my facilities in two down here in Miami and one at Red Ledges in Park City, Utah. And then one in Seoul, South Korea, one in Mexico, Mayacoba, and also one in Madrid, which we're going to here. My wife and I are going over to Europe. We'll be stopping in Madrid. And I also wanted to mention, both of my boys are teaching at top 10 golf courses in America. My son Matt's at Fisher's Island, and John's at Shinnecock Hills this summer. But John's coming back to teach with me here all winter at the Biltmore.
And take that a step further, because the certified instructors that have come out of your schools have gone on to be some of the best teachers in state across the country. Talk about the teachers that you're out there producing.
Well, that's, I think, the best thing. Right now we have 250 of our certified JMGS instructors who are either the director of instruction or the director of golf at some of the best courses in the country, which is really exciting. Number of them are quite a few. Well, I can only have 20 people come, but we've got some of my good friends coming to the PGA Hall of Fame in Frisco coming up. But I'm proud of all of them. I've just had some of the greatest people come to work for us at our different golf schools, especially down here in Miami, and really excited about what they're doing in the game of golf.
Before I let you go, remind our listeners where they can go to hear you speak, by the way, because you're a fantastic speaker, and how they can stay up to date with you with the great things you're doing on your website and on social media.
Well, it's just jimmclain.com. Easy to get us, see what we're doing for our golf schools and instruction, clinics, et cetera. So that's very easy. And then just, I'm on McLean Golf on Instagram and YouTube and X. So that's it.
Jim, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's always a huge privilege to get to spend some time with you. I hope we get this privilege with you again sometime soon.
Thanks very much, Chris. I hope to see you. You said you're going to come down and see us, so someday I hope you will.
Okay. I absolutely will.
Bye.
Take care, Jim. All the best to you and your family. That's the great Jim McLean, folks. At Jim McLean is where you can find him online. I should say jimmclean.com is the website. At McLean Golf is where you can find him on Instagram and X. And folks, look, you want to talk about a guy who deserves to be in the World Golf Hall of Fame. I've been saying this to Jim several times recently. I mean, look, how many Hall of Fames do you have to be in before someone at the World Golf Hall of Fame figures out that this guy deserves enshrinement? I can't imagine it can get any more. He's in six, folks, six Hall of Fames. PGA of America just recently, right? We just learned about that he's going to be a part of that 2025 class. And then on top of all of that, the level of player that he is producing, and then the level of teachers, right? One of the great things that you got to look at when you're talking about the greatest teachers of all time, right? We talk about this with respect to coaches in the NFL or in Major League Baseball, was what the tree looked like. Jim's tree is unbelievable. I mean, that would be probably the hugest tree you ever saw for the guys that he has produced to come out there that have gone on to become some of the other greatest teachers in our game. So look, when you talk about great players, won a national championship in college, great instructor, written for every major publication there is to write for, in every Hall of Fame that there is to be in, except one, this is a guy that really deserves our respect and our attention. And when he's out there writing and he's out there teaching, there's nobody better at it than Jim McLean. It's just such an honor to have him as part of the show now for a fifth time. I'm already looking forward to time six. Hopefully we get the privilege of catching up with him a little bit later on in the year. And he invited me to come down to the Jim McClain School down in Miami, and you can bet I'm going to go. Why wouldn't I? It's just to get to be in the presence of genius. You don't miss those opportunities. So I look forward to being a part of that as well. We'll get him back on the show again before too long. Okay, set to join me next is one of my favorite college golf coaches and just one of my favorite people that I've had the opportunity to spend some time with here on the show over the last couple of years, particularly is the great Steve Schengeldecker. Steve is the head men's golf coach over at Robert Morris. Before I bring him into the show, though, I want to remind you about our friends over at On Point Golf and their out of this world On Point Golf Ball Marker. And if you don't have one, folks, you really need to go check it out at onpointgolf.us. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with OnPoint, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. I also want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at Squares Golf.
So Nick here. What if there was a golf shoe embraced by hundreds of thousands of golfers, celebrated for its stability, comfort, and distance? What if this shoe earned the title of most technologically advanced golf shoe by Sports Illustrated? And what if the company behind that shoe spent the last year perfecting a brand new category of golf footwear? Well, the what if is here. Introducing the all-new Pro S 2LT by Squares, a new class all of its own, the perfect blend of lightweight comfort and stable performance. You'll notice the difference. Change your shoes, change your game. Squares.
I also want to give a special shout out to our wonderful friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company. Their pumpkin ale is back, folks. It's the number one selling pumpkin beer in Western Pennsylvania and incredibly popular everywhere their beer is sold. Why? Because it's everything you love about beer disguised as everything you love about homemade pumpkin pie. Go online to pittsburghbrewing.com to check that one out. Plus, their other great beers, including the Blockhouse Blueberry Wheat, along with my family's favorites, Iron City and Icy Light, of course. Plus, make plans to attend Oktoberfest on Saturday, September 13th and Saturday, September 27th. Tickets are on sale now at pittsburghbrewing.com. All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is my favorite college golf coach, Robert Morris's own Steve Schengeldecker. Let me remind you about Steve's background. He is a native of Franklin, Pennsylvania, which is just a little north of Pittsburgh. He has been the director of golf operations and instruction at the Turn Club in Cranberry Township. Prior to that, he was the director of golf at Nemacolin Woodlands from 2018 to 2020. And you know that place, one of the world's top 100 golf resorts. In college, Steve was a four-year starter for the baseball team at North Carolina State from 1988 to 1991. He was the ACC Tournament MVP in 1990, and his senior season, he was on the All-ACC team. After graduating with his degree in business management, he stayed right there at NC State as an assistant coach, and he helped them win the 1992 ACC Championship. Coming back to golf in 1998, he was a sectional qualifier for the U.S. Open. 2001, he was a local qualifying medalist and sectional qualifier. He also qualified that year for the U.S. Amateur. 2003, he qualified for the U.S. Mid-Am. And like I say, he's been the coach there at RMU now for a few years, and I couldn't be more honored. I get to spend some more time with him this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Steve, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Chris, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So, Steve, I got to tell you, the men's golf program there really starting to shine. You guys have emerged from a program that didn't have a whole lot of success to now your players are winning tournaments on an individual level. Plus the team is up there competing for wins as well. You know, for folks that aren't as familiar with when this, you know, train started rolling, it seemed like it started back in April at the Horizon League Championship. Remind everybody about what you guys accomplished there.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're new to the Horizon League, or fairly new. I guess it's been, our fourth year last year. And the Horizon League is, you know, not obviously as well known as a power, one of the power four, but it's a very good league. And the jump for us from the NEC to the Horizon League has been a tough one. We are the smallest school in the league, which, you know, has a kind of an effect on your fundraising and your alumni and all, a lot of different things, facilities, resources. So it was a little bit of a challenge, and it has been a challenge for some. Obviously, last year for the university was all in was huge. The, you know, basketball winning first seven Horizon League and everything, and you know, both of our, like, our lacrosse, soccer, we've started to do really well in athletics. But from a golf perspective, we were coming off, you know, I said the other night 12th out of 12 to somebody, and they insist there's only 10 teams in the conference. So I really had a bad outlook on it, I guess. I still haven't double checked that figure, but they all seem pretty confident. We were definitely we didn't beat anybody 2 years ago. And so, you know, going into last year, we're with a lot of young guys. We took our lumps early in the fall and then had some real growth in the spring. And that kind of culminated at our conference championship, where we finished fourth. I think more importantly, you know, going into the final day, we had a chance to, we weren't that far off that all of the guys slept, you know, in their rooms, with knowing that we had a chance to win the conference championship and go to the NCAA tournament. And that kind of experience, you know, it just can't be, you know, you can't quantify that. That's everything for us. So a lot of the, almost everybody back, they got to feel that. So we're really looking forward to what we can do now.
So let's take that a step further, Steve, because I remember back at the time you were telling me that, you know, the guys got a taste of being competitive with the best teams in the conference, which is good. Like you alluded to a moment ago, from a confidence perspective, is the team starting to feel more confident in their individual play and their collective play, so that when you get to a tournament nowadays, they start to understand that we can compete with these other teams?
Yeah, they absolutely are. And even maybe to a point where we got to tone it down a little bit. And yet I'm thrilled that we have the confidence. You know, the numbers that we've put up even in just a couple of weeks of, I guess what you would call, we call it competitive rounds, not necessarily qualified rounds, but competitive rounds amongst each other. They're numbers that, you know, frankly, the guys that I have, and I only have a couple of juniors on the team that have been, one senior and two juniors that have been here a little while, they're numbers we haven't seen before. So they're talking about going to Marshall on Sunday and winning. And they're talking about going to the next event and winning. And they're, you know, there's even some chatter around when we go, let's just say, play a Power Five tournament at Nemacolin that's hosted by a school about 90 miles down the road. We played football this week. They're talking about, you know, potentially being able to beat those guys. And that's I always said, I think arrogance is bad, but confidence is great. You can't be overconfident. You can be arrogant. And there's a big difference. And I think the confidence is something we've never had before. And it's nice to see. Now we got to back it up, you know, because with improving comes expectation. But It's really nice to see, like, an energy. And to be quite honest with you, I can feel a little bit of a different energy in me as I'm watching the better play.
Steve, in July, Chuck Tregresser goes out and wins the Western PA Spring Stroke Play Championship there at the Pittsburgh Field Club. His first ever individual win. He won it in a one-hole playoff in some very tough weather conditions. Talk about Chuck's progress and watching him go out there and get his first W.
Yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, Chuck, and I guess if you were looking at somebody on, in terms of the tour, you would call him a real professional. He just does everything the right way. Preparation, his play, there's a difference, and we've talked about it before. It's when you get at this level and above, there's there's an it factor, and Chuck has that factor. And you can say, well, short game's really good, but there's more to it. And it's a confidence, it's a shot management, and he works so hard at it, and he wants to be, you know, he wants to play professionally, and, you know, we all know how difficult that is, but every day he gets a little bit better. That's a lot about is that 1%. And Chuck, to me, and I think the statistics back it, I think he should have, you know, the Pennsylvania-wise, the Amateur of the Year or West Penn Amateur of the Year, I think, you know, everything he's done has more than prepared him to make it a legitimate run. If we don't win the conference championship, I think Chuck can make a very legitimate run at an individual slot in the NCAA tournament.
He continued his strong play and earned low amateur honors at the WPGA Open Championship at Swigley Heights. He actually finished tied for second in the tournament and did so again in tough weather conditions. Talk about not only his performance there, but his proven ability to stay mentally strong when the playing conditions get really rough.
Yeah, it's a guy that, and that it's such a blessing for me to for the younger players to be able to watch him play, and not just as you mentioned, not just play golf, but prepare to play golf and to execute. It's his preparation. It's his, you know, he rarely puts himself in a position. It's a little bit of Scotty Scheffler-esque for this level, if you will, because he rarely puts himself in a position to make bad numbers. And when he is in a position, he's, you know, very smart about getting out of it. So you put somebody like that in tougher weather, and to me, that's just more of an advantage for that player, because it's not going to phase him. He understands, you know, it's one shot at a time. Nothing you can do about that. The weather. That's a big part of golf, especially in college golf when you're playing in the, you know, as fall gets going, and certainly in the spring. You know, you're going to face some tough conditions. We played some awful stuff this last spring. I mean, it's cold and rain, and sometimes snow. Who knows? And it's just, he's that player that has the mental fortitude to stay with it and stay patient and understand that scores are going to be higher, and that the more you can fight it, the better spot you're going to be in.
Steve, you sent me an excited text when your guys were out there playing at Montour Heights. After playing a couple of rounds out there, several of the guys were well under par. Talk about your players. Talk about Ben Sheridan, 7 under par while you guys were there. Chase Parker, 6 under par. Tregresser was 5 under. Tanner Cardwell was 4 under. Connor McKenzie, +1. Peyton Iverson, +2. So every one of the players was playing really, really well. Talk about what you saw from those guys out there.
Yeah, and that was, and I apologize for the, you know, my exciting text or whatever to, you know, to you. That's just our qualifying. So why that's exciting is you take for me to send out, and, you know, I hope in a way the kids don't hear me talk this good about them. But, you know, my first year, we had some stuff last year, as you know, with, as far as a home course. But my first year, we played a lot out of Montour, and I'm not sure I had a guy break par in a round, let alone over you know, several rounds. So in our what we call competitive rounds, that's where the 10 guys on the team go out and play. You know, and then we obviously had them up at the end, and we try to get 4 or 5 rounds in of competitive rounds to help me determine who's going to the first tournament and the rest of the way. So that was just us. So, for instance, you know, what's exciting is Chuck, I think, shot 71, 68 on a golf course that there is an article in Golf Digest that ranked it, I think, the 44th hardest golf course in the country at one point. And Chuck was in third. We had a 7-under from a really solid returning player, and we had a 6-under from a player from last year who obviously spent the time to get a lot better over the summer. And another player, I think, was 4-under. And, you know, heck, I had a 1-over and a 2-over, which over the last 2 years, they probably would have had a 10-shot lead in our qualifying that are now looking, you know, fighting for that 5 and 6 spot. So that's very exciting for us, because that's what makes a difference. It's the best players are the best players in all sports. You know, from when I played baseball at NC State, the 3-hitter at a mid-major is a really, really good player. But the depth is where you kind of start to see the differences in major programs and kind of the mid-major and so on. And right now, for us to be able, and I said this from the get-go when I recruited these kids, I said, I want kids, when they put the peg in the ground on the first hole, have the potential to shoot 68. You don't, I don't know if you're going to, but you have that kind of potential. And now I'm starting to see that. And again, it's so infectious when the kids, when these kids start playing better. And if further, if you recruit the right kids, it's just pushing the rest of them to get better. And that's what we're starting to hopefully see with this group.
So looking back over the last 12 or so months, maybe 24 months, Steve, like we've been talking about, the program went from being at the bottom of the list in tournaments, bottom at the leaderboard, not really all that competitive, to now starting to expect to win. What's changed? What is the difference that has taken place that has made that transformation?
I think the number one is it's just the kids. You know, and I'm not going to take all the credit for recruiting and everything, but there's a certain, and I got, God knows I got a lot of help, reached out to a lot of people, you know, to talk to about what do you look for in recruiting. And I think, you know, for me, I was kind of looking for that kid who has a real passion for the game, who wants to play professionally. Yeah, they understand that the odds of that, you know, aren't great, but that's what they want to do. And, you know, more importantly, or equally, is that I kind of look for kids who may or may not, for one reason or another, have not got to their ceiling. Maybe they started late. Maybe they actually, which is very, you know, as you know, it's not nearly as common anymore. And I do. I have a couple of kids who played other sports pretty competitively until they were 15 or 16. And golf just started to really become their thing. And, you know, but they had the passion. So these kids are driven. And I think, as I mentioned, success breeds success. So when you get somebody like Chuck, or you have a senior, like they have like Peyton, who started to play better last year, or Tanner, that's, you know, a junior, and he really started to put up some good rounds. It starts to push the other kids, and they, golf is so good because you can feed off of each other so well, learn from other players. I think they're learning, you know, from each other. And, you know, I hopefully the messages that we're sending, the things that we're going over every day are just starting to click. And at the end of the day, it's such a strange sport, because when they can practice the most, I'm not with them. And that's the summer. So you got to give them, you hope to give them all the tools, at least in terms of this is what I need you to do for the next 3 months. And then they got to take it upon themselves to embrace that and get after it. And we have a lot of different slogans, the rule of thirds, you know, with your short game, with putting, chipping, and only a third should be on swinging. Working the myth that is there's a perfect swing out there. And I think they're really starting to embrace that, push each other. And again, they're the right kind of kids that are improving on a daily basis.
So you've got your opening tournament of the season next week, September 8th and 9th. It's the Marshall Invitational. 15 teams in the field. Talk about getting ready for that tournament.
Yeah, it's a really good tournament. Marshall has a really good program. Love and there does a great job. And they got it pretty tough because they're in the, I forget which one, but it's got Sun in the name of their conference. So when, you know, you're in West Virginia and your conference has Sun in it, you're pretty tough. Schools like Coastal Carolina and that are in the conference. So it's a really good test for us right away. There's some schools, quite honestly, in there that we want to and expect to beat. And then there's some others that in years past have been better than us. And we want, you know, we certainly want to go down there and hopefully we're not nervous about it, because I know how much these guys want to turn the corner for RMU golf, but we're in a position where, again, I don't think we ever went to a tournament like that thinking we could win it with schools, even of really good mid-major schools. So we're playing every day, obviously. We're practicing every day, but in our competition rounds, so it's different now. In the past, you kind of knew who was going. And, you know, even last year, the round, I hate to, tell you some of the things I might have said, but at times I said, I'm just taking the least worst players to the tournament. And now we're in a position, hopefully, where we're taking the guys that are playing the best and playing tough golf courses where these kids will golf all day. And that's the beauty. Obviously, they have class and stuff, but they're playing nonstop. And that's the kind of kid I wanted to have. And, you know, regardless of how well we may or may not do down there opening, I think, you know, we're certainly on our way, you know, considering we still got some things to work on as far as facilities and resources and things like that for this program.
Looking out to the rest of the fall schedule, you guys go to Muncie, Indiana for a tournament at Ball State, then over to Nemacolin for a tournament that your friends down the highway at West Virginia are hosting, then on to Bucknell in mid-October before rounding out the fall season at Old Dominion. Talk about, do you have a goal, Steve, in mind? Is there a place where you want to be? Is there something that you're looking to see? Are you looking to make sure, hey, look, if we're competitive and we're in all these tournaments, that's good enough? Where now, since you do have some sense of expectation for where these guys are at, where do you want them to be when we wrap things up for the fall season?
We're the only sport that has the two real seasons or two competitive seasons in the fall and the spring. And the players, the one thing we're all keenly aware of are the rankings. I mean, I don't think for the general public and most golf fans, they realize that just like in basketball and football, that there's not only a ranking system for Division I golf, but it's actually really complex, and it's driven by, I honestly don't even know how football does it. I know there's committees and everything else. Ours isn't that, just a complex algorithm based mainly upon who you play and how well you play against them, head-to-head competition in these different tournaments. Now, there's some scoring average and, you know, how close you were. So if you got nipped by one shot by a bunch of teams, that you're going to get a few more points than if you get blown out but take fifth. So there's that. And I think the rankings, as much as, you know, you don't want to necessarily just get stuck looking at them, that's it. These kids know that in the past, Robert Morris and, you know, our golf team has struggled in probably the bottom 15 to 20% of the rankings. There's, I think, roughly 310 Division I college golf teams. And, you know, we've never sniffed being inside of 200. And this group, and we talk about it, 150 has kind of become the goal. I know that doesn't sound, you know, to get inside the 150, like it's, but when you're constantly hovering in that 250, 260 range over the past, getting down there, you're starting to get down there with some pretty strong programs throughout the country, even in the South. And personally, I'd love to see us squeeze inside 200 and kind of go from there. But those rankings they're important for us. They're important to start to prove the program's really moving forward. And again, I think have the potential to do that.
Looking ahead to the spring season, Steve, you guys get started in early March with a tournament hosted by George Mason down at Pinehurst. Where on Pinehurst are you guys going to get the opportunity to play?
We're at Mid-Pine. That's a new one for us. I don't think I've played Mid-Pine, so I reached out to a few friends, and everybody was really complimentary of, you know, what a great golf course it is. I knew it's the Donald Ross tournament, so I knew that. So we were excited. And again, I know George Mason has a really solid program, and they bring a really solid field into that. So we're excited about that. That one is new. Somehow, I don't know why, but I keep scheduling is, you know, it's different in golf. I do the scheduling, basically. And I've managed to find my way into a little bit of a complex world where I'm playing. We have a few tournaments that are every other year. So I'm always sort of scrambling. Ohio State, we played last year. Well, that's every other year. And the field club up here in the fall, that's every other year. So we're sort of, you know, I continue to kind of hunt. And again, now a lot of that's based on your budget. And So we were able to get in there. And you mentioned, you know, going back a little bit about the program and where we're going and where you want to go. Quite honestly, if you want to get into better tournaments, you have to get better. Otherwise, somebody's mostly doing you a favor, because schools like WVU that want, you know, when they have their tournaments, it's more than just how close you are, because they want to get, their rankings matter to them too. So the better the teams they bring to their tournaments, the better opportunity everybody has from a ranking perspective. So we have to get better. Otherwise, I'm going to constantly be begging to go to tournaments. And this is a great year, I think, for us to be able to hopefully get into an opportunity where I no longer have to call all these places and say, please, 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 I promise we're getting better. And I can just say, hey, look, this is who we are. We want to come to your tournament.
So looking at some of the other places that you've been able to schedule the team into, because after Pinehurst, you're going to be back down at Snow Hill, North Carolina for the East Carolina tournament. But then you're back north to Northern Kentucky, a tournament you guys started to play well in last year. Then you get to go over to Penn State and play in their tournament before you look ahead to the league championship. I mean, I think that's pretty solid.
It is. And we're honestly, I'm looking to add potentially one more, depending upon, you know, we got to crunch the budget a little bit, see what, how well we do with fundraising. It's different in this sport and a lot of the, you know, non-major, I guess, sports, is that, you know, we're very reliant on fundraising. We've had to spend a pretty significant amount so that I can get the guys on a golf course every day. And hopefully we're able to generate some more fundraising and build that up to maybe even add another tournament. But right now we're really proud of our schedule, and it gives us, again, the opportunity. And I'm not trying to knock any other tournament, but the truth is there's some tournaments we can go to and we could win and not really go anywhere in the rankings. It only makes sense. It's just like every other sport. If you beat teams that are ranked worse than you, you're not going to be ranking up. And so for us to be able to go, we got the most points last year, finishing 10th out of 18 in West Virginia because of the teams. We beat several Power 5 schools. And that's why we continue to schedule. Now, I did put, you know, frankly, a couple of tournaments in there that, you know, I think also being in the thick of things as far as winning, it's great to go play Oklahoma State and Texas Tech and Texas and stuff at WVU, but realistically, you can't win that one. And I want the guys, in order to prep us for our conference championship, I think we need to be in a couple more tournaments that we can win. And then we go in with a, like we will at conference, hopefully, with a top two or three or whatever mentality, or the, hey, we can go when we're supposed to win this. So I did schedule a little bit of that way too. So hopefully we got the right balance to help us in the rankings, but give us a little bit more experience in playing down the stretch with an opportunity to win.
See, something you've alluded to a couple times in this conversation and things that we've talked about in the past, even though RMU is the only Division I college program there around the city of Pittsburgh, you have struggled to find a club where your team can go and practice and play. Has that changed at all over the last few months since we last spoke?
It's changed in regard to the fact that we have a place to play every day, and we're playing at a great club close to campus. Now, to full disclosure, and you know me, I'm going to tell you the way it is that it came down to me that I am using basically our fundraising money, that each player on my team has their own individual junior membership. And that's so that they can have real access to the club. And, you know, it's not cheap. It's a little better than what that membership might cost somebody off the street, because these kids, most of them aren't there during the summer. But it's a huge chunk of fundraising money. So, you know, I wish it was less expensive. I don't honestly, in the post-COVID era, do I expect a club just to, I mean, that would be great, but I've gotten to the point now where I don't know that I expect a free ride, if you will, but I'd like to see it a little bit better. Now, with that said, the club that we're at, again, very close to campus, if anybody wants to figure it out, I'm sure they can. They've been very gracious, and I think we have an opportunity to grow there and grow the relationship. The players know that. They understand the situation. So we're going above and beyond, hopefully, to get to know members, to get to know staff, to let them see, you know, the quality of player and individuals these kids are, so that maybe in the next year, maybe the next couple of years, we can hopefully get either the cost down or get some of the membership involved in helping us fray the cost. But we have, you know, we have great access to a club right now, but we're paying for it.
So if you guys were to go out and win a tournament or be right in the thick of things, maybe get an individual or two win, maybe get a team win, always right there in the competition, top 2, 3, 4 schools in these tournaments. As the success starts to build upon itself, could you see whether the place that you're at now ponying up more, or other clubs now starting actually to come to you to say that they want to be able to brag that they're the home course of RMU golf?
I sure hope so. I would certainly be shocked if we can't, and we've seen it's gotten better, not probably in the leaps and bounds. You and I have talked about that. I never thought this would be my biggest challenge, is finding my team a place to practice and play. And I honestly don't believe that it's the majority of members at a club or board members or staff. It just usually comes down. And I also understand a little bit. Golf has, it's kind of in a peak again, and members are paying a lot of money, and it's a little bit more full. And when you get an increase or an assessment or something, and you see teams out there playing for free, maybe that is a little bit tougher pill for someone to swallow, and so they complain. I don't know. It's not one I easily understand, especially when it doesn't have a great there for 10 guys, and you know, you'd like to think, like you said, that especially as we get better and start to get a little bit, hopefully, more publicity for what we're doing, that we'll be embraced a little bit more. But, you know, we've talked about what comes first, the chicken or the egg. And, you know, we've settled in on the fact that, hey, if we're going to get more respect, we're going to have to get better first. So we're trying to do that. And we also, you know, the mantra, I guess I heard years ago, and I know from where, but, you know, we developed the mantra that you can make it a part of your excuse, or you can make it a part of your story. And so we're choosing to make it part of our story, that we have to fight, that we don't have a place, we don't have a simulator on campus. We're not making that an excuse. We're going to end up winning, and we're going to say that that we did it in spite of some of the, you know, our resources at times.
See, one more before I let you go. And another thing that we've talked about, I think, over the last couple of times that you've joined the show, is we've got a situation for you and your fellow coaches that you all are dealing with regarding roster size and scholarships, thanks to the NCAA lawsuit and the impact that that's having across college sports. Are you starting to feel the impacts of what you're going to be able to do and not able to do to fill out your roster?
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly in a situation. I get letters, I get caught, you know, I get emails, I get, you name it. And I have 9 players, I have 1 senior, and I have 9 players coming back. So I'm in a situation right now where either I look at one of the kids who's out there playing every day for me and say, you know what, you're not going to have a spot on this team next year, I'm going to bring somebody in, or I just don't recruit. And it's a tough spot. And you know, I to be honest, I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to recruiting. I would rather try to develop the players that I've brought in and the ones that we have, and do what we can, because I'm not, you know, I just don't think it's as much as in a lot of sports, these players are coming in and taking off. you know, my guys haven't done that. So I don't think it's okay for me to cast them off because they're not playing well enough. Now, you got to have some hard conversations, of course. You want kids, you know, honestly, if they can't play on your team or at this level, they should consider, you know, playing at a different school or Division two or three. But I don't want a revolving door of transfers and international and you know, just so I can have a program. The whole thing, you know, the NCAA stuff, and as we talk so much about fundraising, everybody talks about, let's just say the NIL. Although you're doing it for the players. Well, you're doing, that's basketball, that's football, maybe a few other sports if for the elite players. But guess what? If you have a $20 million budget of that's going to NIL, or even a couple hundred thousand in a place like our school goes to NIL, this comes from athletics fundraising. It comes from donor donations. And those are donations and money that would often or would have been going to other programs. So it has an absolute impact on my program, how much money now has to be put into paying other athletes. And I don't think the system is very good for 90%+ of the sports and programs that are out there in the country. It seems very flawed.
Steve, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with the things that you guys are out there doing, whether they're following you and the team online or they're doing it on social media?
Yeah, good one. So generally my answer is, really, I'm not sure, which I'm still not 100% sure. I don't want to go with the Insta snap of Bill Belichick, but I did pick up, I'd love to say I had something to do with it, but I've lucked into a volunteer assistant who played, had a really good career at Division II, and then he bumped up and played at Coastal Carolina for a couple of years, and he's got a full-time job, but he also is very passionate about helping out, and he's young. And he is going to handle our social media, thank God, so that we'll have social media. So you can, I'm sure, start to find us in a lot better light on Instagram and on Twitter and all the other outlets. Matter of fact, the other day when we were at Nemacolin in practice, and I got a text from someone that said, I see you're at Nemacolin. And I was just, I don't know how the heck they found out we were up there. But as it turns out, it's from the posts that were on Instagram that he was putting out. So, we're out there, and we're going to get out there more, and we're going to try to continue to get, RMU golf on the map.
Steve, I can't thank you enough for coming back and being a part of this week's show. I appreciate you very much. I'm rooting hard for you and the team as always. I think this is going to be a special year for RMU's men's golf team, and I'm looking forward to hopefully getting you back on the show here a little bit later on in the fall to brag all about it.
Thanks, Chris. I love coming on.
Take care, Steve. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you. You too. Heal well.
Thanks, Steve. See you, my friend.
All right. Take care.
That is the great Steve Shingledecker, folks. And again, you can follow them on social media at RMU_golf. That's where you can find them on Twitter. I'm assuming it's probably the same handle over on Instagram as well. And look, Steve's a very humble guy. He says, he's going to tell you like it is, but he's a very humble guy. You don't take a program that was perennially down at the bottom of the standings, and suddenly now you are challenging to win as individual, his players winning tournaments, and then collectively as a team. You don't do that on accident. You don't get lucky like that without having a great head coach and a guy that is steering the ship. So don't let him undersell himself, because he's a heck of a player. He was, as you heard during his intro, and he has transitioned that to his team. He's an inspirational guy. He's an inspirational leader, and he's, I'm sure, helping them with their little subtleties in their game. We all know that kids have their own swing coaches and things like that, but when you've got a guy like Steve Shingledecker who knows his way around a golf course, and like I say, being inspirational on top of that, all of that's going to come together in a package that's going to start to uplift the rest of the team. So kudos to him. Kudos to the rest of the team. Look, these kids are really, really good. We didn't, talk about it specifically. Ben Sheridan, when they were competing against each other, 7 under par. Chase Bakker, 6 under par. Chuck Tregresser, 5 under par. Tanner Caldwell, 4 under par. Connor McKenzie, +1. Peyton Iverson, +2. That's a nice team. That's a nice way to round out, you know, getting prepared for the season opener. These kids are all really good. We're going to hear a lot about them this year, and I look forward to Steve coming back and bragging all about it, like I say, hopefully a little bit later on in the fall. All right, there you have it, my friends. It is time for me to put a bow on this bonus edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks go out again to Jim McClain and Steve Shingledecker for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me on the upcoming episodes are PGA Master Professional John Hughes will be here. My Goomba Rob Strano making another appearance. One of the all-time great sports talk radio hosts anywhere, Zig Fricassi, will be back. And another bonus episode is on your way with my good friend and a fantastic author, Tucker Booth, whose collaboration on a great new book with a wonderfully talented and the genius creator, Mike Whalen. They've co-authored a wonderful book titled The Final Broadcast. It is out there and available right now for you on Amazon. Over 600 copies have sold in just the first few days and receiving 5-star reviews too. So please go online to Amazon.com. Check it out for yourself. Again, it is called The Final Broadcast. You're really going to enjoy it. I want to thank our friends again over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to TribLive.com, and you can find the show by then clicking on the Sports Section tab, and the most recent episode, as you guys know, right there front and center on the homepage of the Sports Section. Or you can click on Sports and then Podcast Network. You'll see the Next on the Tee logo. If you click on that, many of the most recent episodes of this season are right there for you as well. You can also find this show pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, including over on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and GolfNewsNet.com. And as always, huge thanks to the great folks at Good Pods. They continue to make Next on the Tee one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But like I say, on each and every episode, my biggest thanks go out to each and every one of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on TribLive or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.